From New York City, the epicenter of the pandemic in the United States, this is Democracy Now!
I'm happy that all the officers have been arrested. My father has not been killed like this. We deserve justice. That's all I have to say.
All four Minneapolis police officers involved in the killing of George Floyd have been charged with murder or aiding and abetting murder in a case that's triggered historic protests across the country. Minnesota's first black attorney general, Keith Ellison, unveiled the charges.
Floyd is not here. He should be here. He should be alive, but he's not. About 9 days ago, the world watched Floyd utter his very last words, "I can't breathe," as he pled for his life. The world heard Floyd call out for his mama and cried out, "Don't kill me."
We'll go to Minneapolis for the latest and to Louisville, Kentucky, where protesters are calling for charges against the officers involved in the death of Breonna Taylor. The 26-year-old African-American woman was shot to death by police inside her own apartment in March.
I don't think that I'm asking for too much, just justice for her. Just that people know the truth, what happened, that she didn't deserve this, that people are fired for doing this to her.
And we'll speak to former Women's March co-chair, Tamika Mallory.
Don't talk to us about looting. Y'all are the looters. America has looted black people. America looted the Native Americans when they first came here. So looting is what you do. We learned it from you.
She's traveled from Louisville to Minneapolis to Houston. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report, the Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison's filed charges against all four Minneapolis police officers involved in last week's killing of George Floyd, which sparked ongoing nationwide protests. A charge of second-degree murder was added against Officer Derek Chauvin, who is already facing third-degree murder charge for kneeling on Floyd's neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds while Floyd pleaded for his life. The other three officers present were charged with aiding and abetting the murder. Chauvin was arrested last week. The three other officers, Thomas Lane, Alexander Kung, and Tu Tao, are now in custody. Keith Ellison, Minnesota's first African-American attorney general, announced the charges Wednesday.
Let me be honest here. I mean, our country has under-prosecuted these matters in Minnesota and throughout the country. And so I think the trust is a result of historically not holding people who are public guardians accountable for their behavior in situations where we should have.
A memorial service will be held today for George Floyd in Minneapolis. On Wednesday, his son, Quincy Mason Floyd, welcomed the charges against the officers.
I am happy that all the officers have been arrested. My father has not been killed like this. We deserve justice. That's all I have to say.
Massive protests calling for racial justice and an end to police brutality are continuing across the country and around the world. In Washington, D.C., the largest crowd of protesters yet converged at the White House late Wednesday after a day of peaceful marches throughout the Capitol. They were met by uniformed National Guard members, as well as scores of heavily armed people in riot gear with all insignias and nameplates removed from their uniforms. The unidentified officers repeatedly refused reporters' demands they identify which agencies they were with, raising comparisons to a paramilitary police force. At the Pentagon, Defense Secretary Mark Esper broke with President Trump and said active-duty military troops should not be deployed to quell the ongoing protests.
The option to use active-duty forces in a law enforcement role should only be used as a matter of last resort and only in the most urgent and dire of situations. We are not in one of those situations now. I do not support invoking the Insurrection Act.
Secretary Esper said he also regretted urging governors Monday to, quote, dominate the battle space, unquote, when dealing with protests. Early on Wednesday, Esper ordered the removal of some 200 active duty soldiers with the 82nd Airborne who were deployed to Washington, D.C., but then reversed the pullout after what was described as an angry meeting at the White House. Meanwhile, Trump's former Pentagon chief, James Mattis, denounced Trump's militarized handling of the protests. Mattis wrote, quote, Donald Trump is the first president in my lifetime who does not try to reunite the American people, does not even try to pretend. Instead, he tries to divide us. We are witnessing the consequences of 3 years of this deliberate effort. On Wednesday, former President Obama expressed his support for the nationwide protests and criticized the actions of some police officers.
Too often, some of that violence has come from folks who were supposed to be serving and protecting you. I want you to know that you matter. I want you to know that your lives matter, that your dreams matter.
Mass protests continue in New York City. Blocks of the Upper East Side were shut down Wednesday as a massive sit-in took place outside Gracie Mansion, the residence of Mayor Bill de Blasio. Meanwhile, over 200 current and former staffers of the mayor signed an open letter. Their demands include cutting the police budget by $1 billion and reallocating the money to social services, including housing support and rental relief, food assistance and health care. The letter also calls for the firing officers who've used excessive force during the protests. This comes as the Legal Aid Society's filed suit alleging hundreds of protesters in New York are being held for longer than 24 hours in cramped cells during the pandemic. Another news from New York. A 35-year-old African-American named Jamel Floyd has died after being pepper-sprayed by guards inside the Metropolitan Detention Center. Floyd had been held at the Brooklyn jail since October 2019. In California, a massive crowd of peaceful protesters converged at the Los Angeles Civic Center Wednesday, accusing Los Angeles District Attorney Jackie Lacey of failing to prosecute police officers accused of misconduct. The protest came as L.A. City Council introduced legislation that would cut up to $150 million from the LAPD's budget, diverting the funds toward health and education programs for communities of color. Many leading athletes have come out publicly to support the protests. Basketball legend Kareem Abdul-Jabbar wrote in the Los Angeles Times, racism in America is like dust in the air. It seems invisible, even if you're choking on it until you let the sun in. You see, it's everywhere. As long as we keep shining that light, we have a chance of cleaning it wherever it lands, but we have to stay vigilant because it's always still in the air, he said. Meanwhile, many NFL stars are speaking out against New Orleans Saints star quarterback Drew Brees, who recently criticized players who've taken a knee during the national anthem, saying he would, quote, never agree with anybody disrespecting the flag of the United States of America. His teammate Malcolm Jenkins posted a video on Instagram responding.
Here we are in 2020 with the whole country on fire. Everybody witnessing a black man dying at the hand, being murdered at the hands of the police with his, just in cold blood for everybody to see. The whole country is on fire. And the first thing that you do is criticize one's peaceful protest.
In other sports news, 16-year-old tennis star Coco Gauff spoke yesterday at a Black Lives Matter protest in Delray Beach, Florida.
No matter how big or small your platform is, you need to use your voice. I saw a Dr. King quote that said, the silence of the good people is worse than the brutality of the bad people. So you need to not be silent.
Monuments celebrating the nation's racist history are coming down in several states after being targeted by protesters over the past week. On Wednesday, the city of Philadelphia removed a statue of the city's former racist police chief and mayor, Frank Rizzo, just days after protesters attempted to topple it and light it on fire. Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney said, quote, the statue represented bigotry, hatred, and oppression for too many people for too long, the mayor said. In Virginia, Governor Ralph Northam is expected to order the removal today of a statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee from the state capitol grounds in Richmond after it was vandalized during the protests. In Birmingham, Alabama, protesters toppled a statue of Confederate officer Charles Lynn and vandalized a monument known as the Confederate Sailors and Soldiers Monument. Following the action, Birmingham Mayor Randall Woodfin ordered the rest of the statue to be removed. In Nashville, Tennessee, protesters toppled a statue of Edward Carmack, a racist politician and newspaper publisher who incited violence against Ida B. Wells for her reporting on lynchings. On Capitol Hill, Republican Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky is holding up quick passage of a bill sponsored by the Senate's three black members that would make lynching a federal hate crime. Senator Paul objected to passing the bill by unanimous consent Wednesday, saying it could, quote, conflate lesser crimes with lynching, unquote. In February, the House passed its version of the bill, the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act, on a vote of 410-4. At the Vatican, Pope Francis had a message for the American people Wednesday.
I have witnessed with great concern the disturbing social unrest in your nation in these past days, following the tragic death of Mr. George Floyd. My friends, we cannot tolerate or turn a blind eye to racism and exclusion in any form and yet claim to defend the sacredness of every human life.
Pope Francis's remarks came a day after President Trump visited the St. John Paul II National Shrine Tuesday, which Washington Archbishop Wilton Gregory called a baffling and reprehensible politicized photo op. He is the first African-American Archbishop of Washington, D.C. The Labor Department releases its weekly report on jobless claims this morning, with economists expecting a 10th straight week in which more than 10 million people filed for unemployment benefits. About one in four U.S. workers has become unemployed during the pandemic, a level not seen since the height of the Great Depression. Meanwhile, a study by Bloomberg News finds the U.S. Treasury has failed to pay out a staggering $67 billion in unemployment benefits during the pandemic, about one-third of all the money owed to jobless Americans. The death toll from COVID-19 in the United States now stands at over 107,000, with 1.85 million confirmed cases, though public health officials say both those figures are significant undercounts. In a majority of states, seven-day averages of new coronavirus cases are either holding steady or rising. Meanwhile, the Trump administration's top official leading federal coronavirus testing efforts, Admiral Brett Giroir, said this week he will be demobilized from his role in mid-June. A coalition of public health officials is calling on police departments to end the widespread use of tear gas against protesters during the pandemic. An online petition signed by nearly 1,300 infectious disease specialists warns the gas could, quote, increase risk for COVID-19 by making the respiratory tract more susceptible to infection, exacerbating existing inflammation and inducing coughing, unquote. The experts also warn against holding anyone arrested in confined spaces, including jails or police vans, which are some of the highest risk areas for COVID-19 transmission. Despite the health risks, the experts encourage people to continue their protests, writing, quote, white supremacy is a lethal public health issue that predates and contributes to COVID-19. An anti-malarial drug touted by President Trump as a curative for COVID-19 has been found no better than a placebo at protecting people exposed to the coronavirus. That's according to a study published by the New England Journal of Medicine, the largest and most scientifically rigorous study of the drug to date. And Hong Kong's legislature has passed a law making disrespect of the Chinese national anthem a crime. The law passed as police ramped up their crackdown on anti-government protests and following a bitter debate that saw scuffles break out on the floor of the Hong Kong Legislative Council. Its passage came on the 31st year anniversary of the crackdown in Beijing's Tiananmen Square when Chinese forces crushed student protesters. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman here in New York City, joined by my co-host Nermeen Sheikh, who's also here in New York, but staying home to stop community spread. Welcome, Nermeen.
Good morning, Amy, and welcome to our listeners and viewers around the country and around the world.
After more than a week of widespread protests across the country, Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison has filed charges against all four Minneapolis police officers involved in last week's killing of African-American George Floyd. A second-degree murder charge was added against white police officer Derek Chauvin, who was already charged with third-degree murder for kneeling on Floyd's neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds while Floyd pleaded for his life, saying repeatedly, "I can't breathe." The other three officers, Thomas Lane, Alexander Kyung, and Tu Tao, have now been charged with aiding and abetting the murder. Chauvin was arrested last week. The other three officers are also now in custody. Keith Ellison, Minnesota's first African-American attorney general, announced the charges Wednesday.
Today, I filed an amended complaint that charges former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin with murder in the second degree for the death of George Floyd. I believe the evidence available to us now supports the stronger charge of second-degree murder. We've consulted with each other, and we agree. Second, today, arrest warrants were issued for former Minneapolis police officers J.A. King, Thomas Lane, and Tu Tao. Finally, I'd like to announce that today, Hennepin County Attorney Michael Freeman and I filed a complaint that charges Police Officer King, Lane, and Tao with aiding and abetting murder in the second degree, a felony offense.
During the news conference, Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison addressed the state's historic failure to hold police accountable.
Let me be honest here. I mean, our country has under-prosecuted these matters in Minnesota and throughout the country. And so I think the trust is a result of historically not holding people who are public guardians accountable for their behavior in situations where we should have. So that, I think, is the origin of the trust problem. But we can't control the past. All we can do is take the case that we have in front of us right now and do our good faith best to bring justice to this situation, and we will.
Well, for more, we go directly to Minneapolis, where we're joined by Nakima Levy Armstrong, civil rights attorney, activist, founder of the Racial Justice Network, former president of the Minneapolis chapter of the NAACP. It's great to have you back with us, Nakima. Can you lay out these charges, what exactly they mean? The upgrading of the charge from third-degree murder, which remains, to second-degree murder for Chauvin, and then what it means that these three other officers were also arrested or in custody for aiding and abetting that murder.
Well, as you may recall, after the third-degree murder charges came out, several of us in Minneapolis, and specifically attorneys, came against those charges. And we raised concerns about the fact that third-degree murder charges were setting Chauvin up for dismissal and or ultimately an acquittal. Because third-degree charges are similar to someone firing in a crowd and randomly hitting a person and leading to their death. So under Minnesota law, it is not usually possible to have a conviction in a situation where a specific person is being targeted, as in the case of Chauvin putting his knee in the back of the neck of George Floyd. And so we believe that second-degree murder charges are much more appropriate in this situation because of the intentionality surrounding Derek Chauvin's actions in snuffing out the life of George Floyd. And the aiding and abetting charges are also appropriate for the other three former officers involved in killing George Floyd. And that means that they would be held just as culpable as Derek Chauvin for their role in the situation.
Well, Nakima, the Attorney General, Keith Ellison, has said, even though he's charged these three additional officers, he's warned, as you're saying as well, of the difficulties of actually prosecuting police officers. In fact, one of the three whom he's now charged already faced a lawsuit for allegedly assaulting an African-American man, leaving him with broken teeth and with bruises. This was Mr. Tu Thao, one of the three who was charged. So what is your sense of what is likely to come of this case?
Well, the hope is that for once in the state of Minnesota, an officer who kills an African-American person will be convicted. That has not happened yet, partly because most of the time, no one is ever charged for killing African-American people. And officers typically are not even fired in those situations. So the public in Minnesota, we know Minnesota is 85% white. And so the public typically supports Officer Word in a given situation. They typically believe that officers feared for their safety. And as African-Americans and other people of color, we're constantly saying that is not our reality. But the flip side of everything is that, you know, we don't know yet about the composition of the jury. Given that Minnesota's 85% white, it's very likely that the majority of the jury will be white people. Some may be misinformed. Some may have a good perspective, a positive perspective about the police, making it difficult to actually secure a conviction. But at this moment in time, given the worldwide attention to what happened to Mr. Floyd, my hope is that there is a paradigm shift in terms of public perception, and that translates over to how the jury.
And Nakima Levy Armstrong, when you talk about the composition of Minnesota, I mean, it could be that one of the first actions is to challenge the venue of this state murder case. And if it were to go outside of the Twin Cities, that would mean that the jury would be even more white. Is that true? I also wanted to ask you about the significance of what Ben Crump said, the family attorney for the Floyds, saying that he thought that second officer kneeling on the back of George Floyd, right next to Chauvin, who was kneeling on his neck, was also key in cutting off the air supply for him. The significance of the three of them on top of this man, not just present, as well as the what looked like the fourth officer, Tao, the one who's had a lawsuit against him, looking like a lookout, protecting them from bystanders, pleading with the officers to get off Floyd.
Absolutely. So, yes, if the venue is switched to another place outside of Hennepin County, it will definitely be much more white, which I don't think will be helpful to securing convictions in this particular case. Beyond that, yes, if you look at the video, at least from what we can tell, the pressure from all three officers on Mr. Floyd's body contributed to his death. They heard the man pleading, saying, "I can't breathe," and they had a callous disregard for his life.
Finally, the power of the protests in upping the charges to second-degree murder against Chauvin and bringing charges against the other three. This certainly wasn't the case last week.
Absolutely. People in the city of Minneapolis, the Twin Cities, folks across the nation and the world all contributed to those charges finally being brought against the other three officers involved in Mr. Floyd's death, as well as the increase in charges for Chauvin based on his role. We know that those protests made a huge difference. It brought worldwide attention to a significant injustice. And now, finally, we can say that first leg of the race has been won. And now we need to move on to the other phases until there's a conviction of all four officers involved.
One last question about Amy Klobuchar. She leaked that the charges were going to be brought yesterday, the senator from Minnesota. And I was wondering if you can talk about the significance of her calling for charges to be brought, but her history, since she is clearly a significant possibility as a vice presidential candidate along with Joe Biden.
Well, you know, as we've said many times before, Amy Klobuchar's record as a prosecutor and her failure to hold killer cops accountable should disqualify her from becoming the next vice president of the United States. Many of us feel that Amy Klobuchar's call for charges is disingenuous in light of the fact that she never brought charges against killer cops when she was a prosecutor. So right now it looks like it's something she's calling for to benefit herself politically, and we're not going for it. Amy Klobuchar needs to do right by the African-American community and be a champion for criminal justice, even when she's not being considered for one of the highest offices in the land.
Nakima Levy Armstrong, I want to thank you for being with us, civil rights attorney, activist, founder of the Racial Justice Network, former president of the Minneapolis chapter of the NAACP, as you get ready to head off to the memorial that's being held in Minneapolis for George Floyd today. This is Democracy Now! When we come back, Tamika Mallory is our guest. Stay with us. Nina Simone. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. As the Minnesota Attorney General, Keith Ellison, files charges against all four Minneapolis police officers involved in last week's killing of African-American George Floyd, a mass uprising against police brutality continues in the streets from Minneapolis to Louisville to Houston to Los Angeles. We go now to activist Tamika Mallory to discuss the latest developments, the police killing as well of Breonna Taylor and more. Tamika Mallory is the former national co-chair of the 2017 Women's March in Washington, D.C., also co-founder of the social justice organization Until Freedom. She's joining us from New York City after participating in the protests in Houston, Louisville, and Minneapolis, where she gave a major speech that went viral. This is a part of it.
Don't talk to us about looting. Y'all are the looters. America has looted black people. America looted the Native Americans when they first came here. So looting is what you do. We learned it from you.
Well, Tamika Mallory joins us now from New York, soon headed to the memorial for George Floyd. We welcome you to Democracy Now!, Tamika. Talk about the latest development, the charges brought against all four officers and their significance.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. So as Nakima, my colleague, has said, we are definitely glad that there have been charges against all four officers. And of course, that the charges against Chauvin have been increased. However, we know that we cannot rely on charges as the end of our fight. We have to ensure that we stay engaged in this movement and continue to push for convictions, because too often we see these things happen where everyone is excited that someone has been charged when we get an officer charged. And then in the end, it falls apart once it makes it into the courtroom, into a system that is not designed to hold police officers responsible for the abuse against poor black and brown people.
Well, Tamika, I mean, several people have pointed out that these protests are very different from the protests about previous black African-Americans killed by the police, from Trayvon Martin to Eric Garner. First of all, these protests spread very rapidly across the U.S., but also across the world, from New Zealand to Brazil to France, and also with much greater intensity. And many observers and protesters themselves have said they've never witnessed such an outpouring of grief and anger on such a mass scale. Now, do you think that the intensity and the range of these protests, as some say, might actually result in substantive change? You've said that we can't rely any longer on just charges against police officers, but also prosecutions. Do you think it's likely that the scale of these protests, unlike the protests that have preceded them, may actually make that possible?
Well, I mean, certainly you are right. The protests that we're seeing today and the ways in which people are engaged and sustaining for so many days is very strong. I think we saw something similar around Trayvon Martin's death when George Zimmerman was found not guilty. We saw real energy across the country where the Black Lives Matter movement was sparked. But of course, in this particular moment, it is intensified. And I think that from Trayvon Martin and even cases before that, leading up to today, all of it comes together and you see that energy. But particularly in the last month and a half, we know that people have literally been traumatized by not one, not two, but three different incidents where I know for sure I've personally been traumatized. Ahmaud Arbery, people watched a video where it was clear that that young man was hunted, and he was hunted by two different cars in which they boxed him in, and he was shot with a shotgun on the streets just for jogging. Then we see Breonna Taylor. Breonna Taylor is a young 26-year-old woman, an EMT worker, so she is a first responder at a time when people are also stressed and going through a lot as it relates to COVID-19. 100,000 plus Americans who have died at the hands of an incompetent administration. And then we come to George Floyd, in which we watch him die. We literally watch his life leave his body. The difference to me in the Eric Garner situation is that as he's being choked, there's some movement of people around. But in this situation, we see George Floyd literally held, handcuffed, down, suffocating. And as the attorney Ben Crump said, he was being tortured by someone who literally sat in his neck and was there trying to kill him, and he succeeded. So therefore, there's a level of trauma that I believe has built up in individuals across this country. And it's no longer just a Black protest or a Black movement. At this point, we're looking at a nation and a world that has decided that what we saw happen on camera, not just in one incident, but Ahmaud Arbery and this incident, is no longer acceptable. And we cannot continue to meet and ask and cry and beg for change. People have taken to the streets to demand change.
And Tamika, I think one of the things that has exacerbated the trauma that you speak of is the extent of the militarization of the police that we see. I mean, we're all in New York City, and you can see, I mean, they're literally the constant sound of helicopters overhead, constantly police sirens all across the city. And then just the figures of these police officers who look more like paramilitary with all this gear and equipment and so on. Now, in New York, hundreds of staffers of Mayor Bill de Blasio have called for defunding the police following what they've seen here, the New York Police Department's response to the protests. Can you respond to that, the question of whether the police, not just in New York, but across the U.S., should be defunded?
So I 100% support defunding the police. The one thing we know about America and its capitalism is that money is all that really, really, really matters. If people were just walking in the streets in New York and across this country and there were not folks vandalizing, which we totally don't support, but to make the point that the vandalism is what has sparked a need to try to reconcile and fix it. And let's see what we can do to calm things down. Not the violence that occurred in the first place against George Floyd, where there should have been swift action to deal with it before people hit the streets. And then afterwards, people began to vandalize some people in rare instances, yet it happened. So the same thing applies when we're talking about the police department and, again, how this system functions based in and steeped in capitalism. If you defund a person, you defund a company, you defund an institution like the police department, you get people's attention. And I completely support that. What I don't think is that you will receive from this mayor in New York City, Mayor Bill de Blasio, an interest in it. And even I don't even think he'll give it the slightest bit of attention. And the reason why, maybe his staffers can help. And I think it's great that they were courageous enough to step out there and to do something on behalf of their communities. However, this mayor has not shown us that he's bold, that he is courageous, and that he's willing to stand up to the police department. It took us 5 years to get Daniel Pantaleo fired after he choked Eric Garner to death. And in the police manual, it says that a chokehold is inappropriate and it is, in fact, illegal. But it still took us 5 years, plus protesters like myself, Kirsten Foy of Arc of Justice, Maison Lennon, Linda Sarsour, and so many others, to go to a presidential debate and have to actually call him out during the debate in order to make sure that he could not go around this country touting his relationships between police and community in New York that doesn't really exist. And so, you know, I'm not confident in this mayor, unfortunately, that he's going to do that work. I've seen him as of late trying to begin to have conversations around the social distancing piece with community groups to figure out other ways to deal with social distancing in communities. But I still just do not feel that he has what it takes to really stand up to Commissioner Shea and those in the NYPD, and particularly the police union.
Tamika Mallory, I've got two questions for you. One is the tear gassing of protesters, this critical issue, these two plagues of racism and police brutality and the pandemic, and the fact that protesters all over this country are getting gas, tear gas, pepper sprayed, and coronavirus is a respiratory disease, and it's particularly affecting communities of color who are the leaders now of these protests all over the country, what this means. And the other question has to do with the militarization of police all over, the buzzing by a helicopter of the protesters in Washington, all levels hiding their affiliation of security, whether you're talking National Guard, Bureau of Prisons, all together with police, and the whole battle over whether the Army is going to be involved with suppressing protests, and what you make of people like Mattis, the former defense secretary, General John George Allen, and others who are now condemning Trump for what's happening right now, bringing the army into the streets. And Esper, it's not clear where he stands. He condemns it, then he goes back. He has a fight with Trump, and then he says he supports it. Not clear. But your thoughts on both.
So I think the tear gassing and the ways in which the rubber bullets of which I experienced in Minneapolis, and I know much about it because many of my friends and colleagues in this work experienced the same on the streets of Ferguson when Mike Brown was shot and killed and left there for 4 hours, laying on the ground for the entire community to see and to be traumatized by. I know that America has always been militarized in terms of its police force. And we've been saying that. In fact, there is a campaign called End the Police Militarization that folks have been pushing to get done in Congress. And so we've been sounding the alarm about all of these things. This is not new. As it relates to what we see happening with the administration, the president of the United States ran on being a law and order president. He said it. And that was a part of his platform. So we knew what he would do when he had the opportunity to show that he is, in fact, the law and order president. He is also an extremely disrespectful, and his rhetoric is racist. His rhetoric is dangerous. And in fact, because of his actions, people are on the streets even more angry. I believe that this president has incited most of what we see happening today. He does not know how, nor does he care to bring people together. Instead, he wants to send the military to the streets because I don't even think he knows how to actually work on relationships between humans and bring people together, and especially not as it relates to race relations. I am happy to see that those individuals, one who actually he actually brought into office, that they would be courageous enough to speak out, because wrong is wrong. And if you are a person of good moral standards, you should speak truth to power. And so that is what we have seen happen. And I am very, very grateful to those people who have done that. I wish they had done it earlier when they hurt, because as Maya Angelou said, when someone shows you who they are, believe them. And now we know that we can actually believe who Donald Trump said he was. And now November is coming, and I hope people are getting themselves prepared to do what's necessary to take back our country.
Tamika Mallory, we want to thank you for being with us, activist and former national co-chair of the 2017 Women's March in Washington, co-founder of the social justice organization Until Freedom. She talked about Breonna Taylor. We're going to go extensively more into her case. When we come back, we're going to Louisville, Kentucky, where thousands are protesting for more than a week in a row, 7 days, demanding justice not only for George Floyd, but for two black Louisville residents killed by police, including Breonna Taylor, the EMT police shot dead in her own home. Stay with us. Won't Do by Reverend Sekou. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Wednesday marked the seventh night of protests in Louisville, Kentucky, as thousands demanded justice for George Floyd and for two black Louisville residents killed by police, including Breonna Taylor, 26-year-old African-American woman shot to death by police in her own apartment in March. Taylor was an emergency room technician treating COVID patients. As protests for Breonna Taylor and George Floyd raged on Monday, both police and the National Guard fired shots at a crowd of protesters, killing David McAfee, whose body reportedly lay in the streets of Louisville for over 12 hours. David McAfee owned a local barbecue business. He was a beloved figure in the community who regularly gave police officers free meals. Wednesday night, hundreds of cars lined up in a caravan to honor McAfee and Taylor and drove to the site where McAfee was shot and killed by police this week. Louisville Police Chief Steve Conrad has now been fired after it emerged two officers who were at the scene of McAfee's shooting did not have their body cameras activated, a violation of police Department policy. Conrad had already announced his plan to retire at the end of this month as a result of the police killing of Taylor. This comes as the Louisville Metro Council's Public Safety Committee voted unanimously Wednesday night to approve proposed legislation called Breonna's Law that would regulate no-knock warrants. The law is based on what happened to Taylor on the night of March 13th when police with a warrant to search for illegal drugs entered her home and say they were immediately met by gunfire from Taylor's boyfriend. A lawsuit filed by Taylor's family says the officers arrived at the home in plain clothes, unmarked cars, did not announce who they were, and that Walker and Taylor thought they were being robbed. The Louisville Courier-Journal reports the police were investigating two men who they believed were selling drugs out of a house that was far from Taylor's apartment. A judge had also signed a warrant for them to search the house because police said they thought one of the men had used it to receive packages. 911 tapes from the night have now been released. Now, this is a warning. It's an excerpt of the call from Breonna's boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, as he spoke to Metro EMS dispatcher after Louisville Metro police officer shot his girlfriend. Again, a warning to our listeners and viewers. This call is highly disturbing.
I don't know what's happening. Somebody kicked in the door and shot my girlfriend. Brittany. Oh,
you said 26? Where was she shot at?
I don't know. She's on the grill right now. I don't know. Help. Oh, my God. Yes, help.
What's
help.
Your name, sir? Is she
alert
and able to talk to you?
No.
That's Breonna Taylor's boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, speaking to a 9/11 operator after Louisville Metro police officer shot his girlfriend in their home. This is Breonna Taylor's mother, Tamika Palmer, speaking Monday.
I don't think that I'm asking for too much. Just justice for her. Just that people know the truth, what happened, that she didn't deserve this, that people are fired for doing this to her. To know Breonna, she was full of life. She loved life. She respected life. This is so much bigger than her.
Well, for more, we go to Louisville, Kentucky, where we're joined by Sudeika Reynolds, president and CEO of Louisville Urban League. We welcome you to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us, Sudeika. I mean, for people who had not heard this story, perhaps because there wasn't videotape inside the home of Breonna. This is a young woman who is helping care for COVID-19 patients. She goes home and explain exactly what happened.
Well, she's working. She goes home. As you said, she's risking her life taking care of COVID-19 patients. And she goes to bed, is my understanding, and her boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, was there with her. At some point in the night, the police showed up. It seems to be clear that they did, in fact, knock. As you know, they had a no-knock warrant, but they did. What they did not do was announce themselves. So when they knocked, I think it probably frightened Kenneth. He got up. He is a licensed gun owner. He had his gun. And when they came through the door, he fired. One of the officers was shot, and they fired back. And they fired back in such a way that there were 22 bullets sent into that house. 8 of those bullets landed in Breonna's body. One of those bullets, at least, landed in the next door neighbor's house in the bedroom of a 5-year-old. One of those bullets, at least one, landed in Breonna's sister's room, who, thank God, was not at home, because if she had been, maybe her mother, Tamika, would have lost both her children that evening. And the 911 call that you hear, I guess that is when police must have retreated because one of the officers had been shot. And so that's why Kenneth had the time to make the call. What is disturbing here is that police have always known that that 911 tape existed, and there seemed to be some controversy. Well, we did not know this. The community was not under the impression, never heard about any 911 call until this case really, it was in May. I mean, and very quickly, he was released once we really began the outcry to say this man should not be in jail, because it corroborated what he said. I didn't know that it was police coming in. And I think they attempt to say sometimes that he's contradicted himself. But I think it's insane for them to think like that. If you think about what it is to see someone you love, who you were just in bed with, be murdered in front of you. By the time they take you to interview you, only God knows what you'll say. Or, you know, there's so many things going on in your head, and police know this better than anyone. That's why they wait so long to be interviewed after they have had a situation like this where they've taken someone's life.
And it ends up, Sadiqa, that the man they say they were looking for was already in custody, and they said, sorry, this was a mistake.
Well, first of all, these police never say sorry, so that absolutely did not happen. That they don't say sorry. They've never said sorry for anything. What it is, there is a man who was an alleged drug dealer, and the allegation is that he was storing drugs at her house or having drugs shipped there or something. So her name was actually on the search warrant. That gentleman was someplace else. Obviously, she was there with Kenneth Walker. But when you hear the story, when the police told the story, you kind of get this story that we went into the drug suspect's house. The one of the suspects fired at officers, hitting an officer. A female suspect was caught in the crossfire. Basically, it was killed. And so this whole female suspect, male suspect, well, he was never a suspect. And she was never suspected of selling any drugs or anything like that. So one of the things we're really hoping that the FBI takes a very hard look at is the content of the affidavit that the police officer used in order to get the search warrant, because there are things stated in that affidavit, things like we observed this other person leaving Breonna Taylor's home with a package, and we observed Breonna Taylor's car at this other location. So the questions that we have are, well, when was that? Who was driving the car? When did you see him leaving with a package? How long ago? How many times? All of those things. Because there were also some allegations in the affidavit. There's a sworn statement that they had spoken with someone from the postal office who said that there were packages, suspicious packages. Well, that's just not true. So there are so many things that really need to be checked on and confirmed in the affidavit, because there is some belief that the affidavit is flawed. And quite frankly, the warrant itself is.
Sadiqa, it looks like we just lost Sadiqa Reynolds, president and CEO of the Louisville Urban League. We're going to re-get her on the Skype. As you see, the way we're conducting interviews all over is for people to remain safe at home and to be able to do these broadcasts from home. But I want to go to the Kentucky governor, Andy Beshear. On Monday, he said he supported Louisville Mayor Greg Fisher's decision to fire the Louisville Metro Police Chief, Steve Conrad.
It is unacceptable that the officers that responded last night did not have body cameras on and recording. This is the entire reason that we have those cameras. I believe at this point that Chief Conrad, who somebody I've known and is a nice individual, it had to happen. It had to happen. Two incidences of this significance, no body cameras. It had to happen.
So that's Governor Beshear. Sadiqa Reynolds, take this forward. You have the police chief being forced out, but he was allowed to resign and stay for a couple months until the end of June because of what's happened here. And no officers have been charged. Is that right? In the killing of Breonna Taylor. And then explain what happened this week in the midst of the protests. Now he's been fired.
In the midst of the protest, in the midst of us complaining, and the mayor responding, the mayor has tried very hard to be responsive, and he says there legally are things that he can't do quickly as it relates to termination of these officers. But he did say that they would, moving forward, be wearing body cameras. Well, as people were out protesting, the National Guard came in. LMPD obviously was already here. And Louisville, like many cities, has that divide, and ours starts at 9th Street. Most of the protesting was happening in downtown Louisville, or which is a business district, and in the Highlands area. For whatever reason, the National Guard and the police department ended up in the West End of Louisville, which is beyond, you know, that 9th Street divide. That is, you know, most of those folks probably didn't even know there was a curfew. They weren't in tune. Certainly they were in tune with things that were happening, but not probably watching the news or whatever. I mean, they just weren't protesters. They were going to get barbecue. There was a man there, Yaya. He had a business on 26th and Broadway, and he sold barbecue, and he gave barbecue away, and he fed community, and he fed the police. In fact, I think he'd even catered an event that the police had. They thought highly of him, just as the community did. What police say is that there something happened. We don't know what exactly, because the video that they've turned over is not that clear. You know why? They were not wearing body cameras, and he's dead now. That, you know, David McAtee is dead now, and we don't have a clear understanding of what happened. You can certainly see him going out his door, raising his arm, but you also can slightly see smoke there, so you don't know what happened to provoke this. Was he shooting when he raised his arm? Was he waving? Was he? I mean, we just don't know the answers. And, now he's gone. And what people are trying to figure out is, why was the National Guard at 26th and Broadway? Why were the police? They were supposed to be focused on protesters. And, you know, why were they there? Those people out there were not protesting. They were getting barbecue. They were hanging out. They were doing what they do any typical evening. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. And can I say this? I think it's so important. Sometimes when you have these kinds of cases, you have this other side that goes, aha, he did something wrong. So therefore, what? He deserves to be executed.
Sadiqua, I want to go back to a point that you made in Breonna Taylor's case, namely that the judge was granted a no-knock warrant. Can you explain what that is? Because it seems to have an inherent risk, namely that people whose houses are searched without a warrant are likely to respond with force, or could respond with force, especially in a country which is so heavily armed, that is a risk. So why did the judge grant, in this case, a no-knock warrant? And your response to this proposed Breonna's Law and groups like the ACLU wanting to ban no-knock warrants entirely?
Well, I think that, can you hear me?
We hear you perfectly.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I don't understand. There are certainly in situations where I can imagine if you have a kidnapping in process. I think about the case in Cleveland where the man had several women locked in the basement for all of that time, all of those years. That's somewhere you're not going to knock there. But if you think that there are drugs in a home, you're going in at 1 o'clock in the morning. You've had a search warrant since 12 o'clock in the afternoon. That's not exigent circumstances. There's no need to execute a no-knock warrant. And in fact, they did knock. So there's evidence that they didn't need a no-knock warrant. Many, many judges would not have signed it. And not just that it was a no-knock, but there was information that was not clear. Timing, was the information in the affidavit stale? How long had it been? All of those kinds of things are things that need to be looked at. As it relates to Breonna's Law, and I think it's right to limit the no-knock warrants. I think the Metro Council here in Louisville and the ACLU and all the organizations that are working on this are exactly right. I think it was right for the mayor to suspend all no-knock warrants, period. But that is not going to bring Breonna back. And what we have to have in this country is a way to more quickly respond to these officers who make these sort of terrible decisions that cost people their lives, innocent people, and sometimes, and this is the hard part for folks, sometimes guilty people. But guilty people don't deserve to be executed on the streets
in America.
Sadiqua,
very quickly, your own Senator Rand Paul, opposing the anti-lynching legislation. We have 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm. He is being who he is.
Well, Sadiqa Reynolds, we thank you for being who you are, president and CEO of the Louisville Urban League, speaking to us from Louisville. As we broadcast, the U.S. Labor Department has released its latest unemployment numbers. Almost 2 million Americans applied for unemployment benefits last week. A cumulative 42.6 million U.S. workers have now filed claims since the start of the pandemic. Expanded unemployment benefits are set to expire at the end of next month. That does it for our show. A huge thank you to our amazing team as they prevent community spread by working from home. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Stay safe.